As you come into this world, something else is also born. It moves slowly, but it never stops. Your life will then be over.
I know you. I've seen you before. It's a killer puzzle box designed to scare me to death. And I'm trapped inside it.
If you were any part of killing her, and you're not afraid, then you understand nothing at all. So for your own sake, understand this. I am the Doctor. I'm coming to find you, and I will never, ever stop.
Spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this week by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
Really good, really good. Just before we went on the air, I was saying that I got a lot of stuff on my plate right now, but it's all good. You know, it's all good stuff. It's just a lot. So Can't complain. Can't complain. And hope you're, enjoying life as much.
Indeed. I'm having fun. I'm
good.
Enjoying, you know, there's so much content right now. It's like there's a content dump. We've got Discovery's final season going on right now, which Clarence can give a nod to that. And then we've got recent Beyond Paradise. We've got Death in Paradise for me. And I don't know where I missed this, but I also found out there is going to be another spinoff, Paradise, Return to Paradise, set in Australia. So death everywhere and it's all in paradise.
Interesting.
So that leads me on to say, while he's already shaking his head, Clarence Brown, how are you, Mr. Brown?
I guess I'm ready to get caught up on the CSI of Paradise.
Indeed. You know, it's funny. I was thinking
CIS of Paradise.
Indeed. So everything going good with you?
No complaints, man. Glad to be here.
All right. Really, really quick, since I did make a mention of Discovery, where might someone who wants to hear people talking about Star Trek Discovery or anything Star Trek, where might they go?
I will direct you to go to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/discussingtrek.
All right. And if they would like to know more about Discussing Who, where might they go?
Well, of course, you can go to discussingwho.com or also to visit Discussing Network on the YouTubes there. So stay locked in. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. And should we have someone watching or listening for the very first time, Lee Shackelford, what do you like telling people?
I always like to tell people, welcome aboard and thank you for spending your time with us. We know you got other things you could be doing, so we're conscious of the compliment. Thank you, and we will try not to betray your trust. Morgan Lee in the chat says, this is my favorite episode of Who coming up here. So, tread indeed. Lightly, tread lightly.
And I'll tell you why in just a moment that I'm doing this. Why don't you say that one more time, what you say to everyone about thank you. Do it one more time for me.
I always like to say thank you for being here.
Good deal. Because and the reason I wanted you to say that, sir, was because who forgot to do that last week and asked you to do that last week?
That's
me.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have to thank you twice as much this time to make up for last week.
Bingo. Exactly. Yeah. But before we move on, I want to give some news and a little thank you shout out to the people of All of Time and Space podcast. So Lee, tell us a little bit about that.
If you're not aware, the two lovely chaps named Ian and Mark in the UK do this lovely, I'll stop saying lovely, podcast called All of Time and Space. And they have a more leisurely pace than we do. They do, you know, an episode and then it may be a bit before they put out another one. And I like it. They're very thoughtful and it's just really slickly produced. And I just had the best time talking with them. They invited me on to talk about The Mind Robber, which is a Second Doctor adventure that is happily one of those that's intact. and that we can see. And it's quite an interesting story. A lot of people who were able to see the Celestial Toymaker have said that you can sense that the writers maybe wanted to try that one again, try that plot again, mm-hmm. only do it right this time. And that's what the Mind Robber is. So, but anyway, there's a character in it who has the maybe unfortunate name of Carcass, not C-A-R-C-A-S-S, but K-A-R-K-U-S. Anyway, so it makes the pun inevitable. So the episode I'm on is called Over My Dead Carcass. on Doctor That's Who, good. All of Time and Space. Just search for them by title. I think the actual official podcast title, if you're searching, is Doctor Who, : All of Time and Space, but you'll get there. Anyway, do give it a listen. They put on a great show, and you may find you just want to keep coming back for more. Anyway, I'm so grateful to them for having me on. I had a great time.
Indeed, indeed. You know what? That sounds like it would be fun doing a collaboration. Anytime I can collaborate with people who love Doctor Who, that's always fun.
I would love that. That would be fabulous.
So, just wanted to put that out there. So, gentlemen, if you are listening, you have an open invitation to come join us. So that would be awesome fun. All right. So I do myself have one thing of news, and it is literally news because it's magazines. I am really enjoying how much publicity, and this may be part and parcel with Disney. It may be part and parcel with RTD. It may be a combination of both, but I am really enjoying the amount of publicity that Doctor Who is getting, from being on the cover of Rolling Stone to Entertainment Weekly. I mean, I kind of expect SFX magazine and, of course, Doctor Who magazine.
Sure.
But Entertainment Weekly and Rolling Stone.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, to be fair, it looks like those are not so much about Doctor Who as they are about Shooty, but what the heck?
Right now he is Doctor Who.
He is
the Doctor. Or however you want to name him. And I love the name, Who is Shooty Gatwa? The play on words, I just think that's cool. So,
and Shooty Gatwa is who?
Indeed, indeed, indeed. So, gentlemen, anything else before we get into a billion-year-long episode?
Which won't take us that long to discuss, I don't think.
No, indeed. So, without further waiting, without further anything else, I must say, if you have not seen Heaven Sent, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward...
Spoilers!
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 Spoilers.
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 Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review Heaven Sent. This is the 11th episode of the 2015 series of Doctor Who, first airing on the 28th of November, 2015. It starred Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor and was directed by the always awesome Rachel Talalay.
Amen.
So, summary view. Clarence Brown, I want to start with you. Summary view. What say ye?
Oh, man. I remember really loving this episode my first time seeing it. And this is, I think, my second time going through it for this review. And I really still enjoyed it. I thought it's just such an excellent episode, such a hard episode to watch once you realize how everything is unfolding. So a tough one for the Doctor. And yeah, I can't wait till we unpack it, because, you know, I think it's an interesting episode.
All right. Lee, what say you?
I remember being a little upset by it the first time that I saw it, just because some of it veers towards torture porn. That not that we're supposed to enjoy seeing the Doctor being broken this way and harmed, but just that that we dwell on it so long. And I don't know if it's just me. It's a, It seems to me like it's a British sci-fi thing. There were a lot of episodes of Space 1999 and UFO, where what we're going to see is our principal cast having their being driven out of their minds by something, and so maybe it's just Gerry Anderson. But anyway, but so here it is in Doctor Who, and so I find that hard to watch. But overall, what big ideas! What an interesting puzzle box! And what struck me this time is what a great haunted house movie it is, and a lot of that I give to Rachel Talalay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just lighting, shot composition, choosing when to move the camera and when to lock it down. It's just wow. It's just great stuff. So hats off to Rachel. Mm. So,
you know, I'm kind of like Clarence. I know this is more than once that I've seen it, but if I were to compare it to the finale, how many times I've seen it compared to this one, obviously I'm watching the finale many more episodes, you know, times than I've watched this one. I remember thinking and actually saying last night as I was watching this again, I had forgotten how dark this is.
Wow.
You know, how, like you said, it's almost, or when, Clarence, I think it was you that might have said, which one of you, said it was almost like torture porn. You know, it was so, you know, not evil.
It's as dark as it gets.
But it's as dark as it has gotten, I think. Yeah. This by far is much darker to me than Death in Heaven and, you know, with Danny Pink was much, not as dark as this.
And that's saying something.
And that is muchly saying something. So let me ask you, and Lee, I'll put you this question to you first. When did you realize in the watching, whether it was this time or the initial loop of watching it, when did you realize that he was the predecessor? He was in a time loop repeating. Do you recall?
That lake full of skulls are all his?
Yes.
Yikes. I think not until he wired himself up to give his energy to the machine to keep the cycle going.
Mm.
I think when he put those electrodes on his temples, and we'd already seen the skull with the electrodes on its temples, I said, "Oh my God!" Yeah, and you know, when I bought the DVD set for this season, I now remember the first thing I did was pull this out to watch again. So I'm different from you in that. I remember that I watched it a couple of times. It's like, this is the episode maybe of this season that I've seen the most. I kept questioning myself. I kept wondering, am I right about that? Is that what's going on here? I need to go back and look at this. And yeah, so there you go.
All right, Clarence, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's beautifully well written to make all of this flow together seamlessly. And I would even say that it's not really a time loop episode, in a sense that he's sort of reliving the same moments, the same beats again. But as Lee mentioned, or we mentioned up top, it's been millions of years. So time is still going on, but he's repeating his same cycle to get to a certain point. So time is progressing, but he is emerging from the buffer as he did two billion years ago each time. So to think of the enormity of, you know, we fuss all the time about the changes they make to the Doctor. I wonder what the reaction was when people saw this, because honestly, it's not any different from normally going through some type of transporter or transmat or whatever you want to call it. But he is resetting himself each time. So did he really live for that long?
This is why I love doing this podcast with you guys, because we know each other so well that I can predict what you guys are going to say. Because my next question, and I'm going to leave it with you, Clarence, is, was this a virtual reality, or was it another dimension? Basically, is the Doctor now billions of years old or not?
I would say no, because each time he's emerging on the trans, I'm gonna call it a transport. I'm sorry, guys. Each time he's emerging in the transport, he is as he was the first time that he came through, but it doesn't negate the fact that millions of versions of him progress through all those years. So a version of him lived through all those years, certainly, and lived, died, ran away from this being, tried to survive, bashed away at this barrier. But did he live for that long in actuality? Maybe not. So I guess in that case, it is sort of like a time loop. It's, again, a well-written episode because it has my brain still kind of in a tizzy. All right, Lee,
what about you? Answer that same question. What do you think?
It's the big question of this episode. And how old is Captain Picard? Because he's lived two entire adult lifetimes.
Yeah.
As has Miles O'Brien.
Yeah.
So how old is O'Brien?
Yeah.
And if we take this seriously at all, if this is the same person, then he's 2 billion years old. Which I feel like they kind of glancingly referred to later on in the series, but anyway.
Well,
he said he's thousands and thousands of years old.
So Morgan in the chat brings up, he says, I can remember Clara. I can remember it all. Every single time. Then goes into, why can't I just lose? And she goes on to say, and I can't keep doing this. He restarts every cycle, but then at some point, it seems his memories flood back to him.
Yeah. So he starts off a clean slate, but it does all come back to him.
And that's a little bit entirely logical, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But we were talking about how this was received when the episode first aired. And I remember there was just enough social media at that time that I was in, you know, what was it then? Bulletin boards, talking with people about, the transporter, the whole concept on Star Trek. And they said, this one's even worse. This is a death machine. I think the Doctor is dead. I think that this episode succeeded in killing him off. And a surprising number of people were agreeing with that. And the transporter kills you too. The person who goes off with your body and your memories is somebody else. It's not you. Those are problems if you want to take all this stuff very, very seriously. But the line in this that bugs me is, there's a copy of me still in the hard drive. A copy of me.
Yeah.
In the hard drive.
Hmm. So are we to assume at that point that Time Lord technology has the ability to upload consciousnesses? Apparently. Well, we know that because of the Matrix.
That's right. How is this different from the Matrix? Yeah. But
anyway. are we assuming, because this was an elaborate puzzle and we know that it's some sort of reality that he's in, which ironically enough, he can still see the stars. But anyway, are we saying that because he was in some type of virtual reality puzzle, whatever you want to call it, that's why he could remember after living for a little bit longer, he could remember until the next cycle?
I might buy that.
Yeah.
But if you take, and this goes into making this, and I haven't even thought about it in this way, or if I have, I've forgotten that I thought about it in this way, but to make it even more dark, think of this idea that this is a confession dial, and it's supposed to be someone's last will and testament. So I think the idea in the positive way of this confession dial is, as your consciousness is dying, as you as a being are dying, you confront and come to peace and terms with whatever your subconscious is. But because the people that we will find out, we'll talk about at the end, are trying to find out specific information, they're basically torturing him over billions and billions of years to find out what they want to know.
Well, and maybe for most people, it doesn't take that long. That people would just stay in there forever or appear to. That's their hell. But the Doctor is unique in that he figures a way out. It's going to take 2 billion years, but he's going to do it. Because that's what he does.
So let me just say this before we move on. Anyone who wants to complain about bi-regeneration, they never complained about billion regeneration.
Well,
just saying.
I guess I know some people have, but yeah. Well, yeah, but I guess some people have, but yeah. Just because I did find this a little problematic. I thought he's dead, I think. I'm not comfortable with that. But you're right. It's all in the confession dial. Maybe this is just a way of having him, his mentality, his experience of himself, his soul, if you will, have this experience that goes on for 2 billion years. Complete with details like him being able to judge by the stars how much time has passed. Yeah. Kind of just to rub it in.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know what went on in other Time Lords' confession dials. But
wouldn't you like to know the Master's confession?
Exactly. He hasn't been. But at the end of Face the Raven, the Doctor gave this to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in her possession until it turns up here on Gallifrey.
At the end of the universe.
At the end of the universe. Yeah.
No spoilers.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember thinking, hey, that's a continuity error. But, yeah, just hang on. Right.
So let me ask you guys this. Before the big reveal at the end where he shatters the diamond and or the thing that is much harder than diamond and
as,
you realize.
As Bentium.
Yes. Yes, and he's now revealed to be on Gallifrey. Mm-hmm. Who did you guys think might be responsible? Or did you have a clue or have a thought of who was responsible for sending him there? Who had May or me? Who, you know, we were talking last week as who were the ones coming and saying, we'll protect the trap street as long as you do this. Who did you think was behind that? Any thoughts?
I kind of figured it was something to do with Gallifrey. Although I don't remember the next episode, so I don't know if that is completely true or not. So, but that's kind of the thought I had at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember ever not thinking it was the Time Lords. Maybe I just don't remember, but it seemed to make sense in terms of the level of power and manipulation.
Yep. And I think if we look back, I think some of the inscriptions on the machine that he put his hand in to get, there were Time Lord-ish font and writing and whatnot. So
that's right. Yeah. We were given more than enough clues, I think. Yeah.
So this one I want to point, of course, because of who I'm about to talk about, to Clarence first. We see the return of Clara, or do we see the return of Clara? What do you think?
Well, that's one of the questions I have written down on my notes. And I guess it's more of a meta thing. I was like, is that really Jenna Coleman? They won't show her face until they do eventually show her face. But I think you have to talk about this construct, and maybe you guys can help me out, because I don't ever quite remember a time where we get so intimately in the Doctor's head, because I think they're using the TARDIS as a construct for how he thinks, how he's able to slow down and come to his place of comfort, you know, the place he loves the most to reason out what's going on. And that was one of my favorite things of this episode, when we did go there and we did get to see him, you know, talking to some form of thing that is probably, you know, what he thinks of Clara in this construct. But just interesting seeing him bounce questions off her or again, this imagination of what Clara is in this construct, getting him to ask the right questions, getting him to remember. I thought that was a great way to, in this, you know, I Am Legend / Oblivion / any other movie where there's only one person to kind of hold the story, to get him to kind of talk and let us know what's going on in his head as he tries to reason out some of these things.
Mm. Lee, what about you? What do you think?
I agree completely. I never assumed that Clara is actually there somehow, or even is being shown to him in some way. This is all taking place inside his head, including the interior of the TARDIS. Yep. This is what he knows. This is what he has done for years. And he says so, that I glide about my TARDIS showing off, and I ask you questions. Mm-hmm. And so he's just going to keep doing it. In the chat, I think Morgan Lee's made a great point saying, I've seen analyses this episode saying, yeah, it's a sort of examination of grief about losing someone, talking to them, letting them still be a large part of your motivations. And that's an interesting take. It certainly is. And I think that's very keenly observed. And I feel like it's deliberate, that that's really what Stephen Moffat is up to here. Mm-hmm. That he's not letting her go. She's been very useful to him. And so, you know, now this is a shorthand way of saying, what would Clara say?
And you know, it's funny, well, not funny, but it's interesting, Morgan's comment, because one way that I took the headspace, as I'm calling it, as, you know, when people are confronted with grief, or whether they're confronted with conflict or some situation and they need an escape, you know, a lot of times you do visualize some place that you feel safe. Yes. And the TARDIS for the Doctor is where he feels the most safe.
Right.
And that's where he went to. Now, from a directing point of view, you know, we mentioned Rachel in comments and accolades to her. One of the things that I thought was so smart about what she did, I don't think that was Jenna Coleman until we saw Jenna Coleman. Mm. I think that was a body double that was at the chalkboard until we see Jenna Coleman when she interacts with the Doctor. But if that was her, she did a perfect job of standing so still where you didn't know. And I think that's directing, right? Yeah. I think that's, if that was
it's
her,
a choice.
You know, it was a choice made by Talalay to say, don't move, let the audience guess if that's you, or you brought in a body double. You know, perhaps, but regardless, it made when you saw her a surprise, because you had this feel all the way through the episode. Oh, well, that's just a body double. Oh, well, Jenna Coleman's gone. No, she wasn't.
Yeah. Well, part of the way through the episode, it's got to have clicked with people, everybody in the audience. Wow, we're doing a Doctor Who episode that has nobody in it but him. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's the veil, as is called in the closing titles, which is death in the shroud, that's all. So that can be anybody. And then there's Jenna Louise Coleman's big eyes. we're actually going to have a cameo as well already. And it's a genuine surprise. Like, I really kind of thought that was why we were getting the body double at the chalkboard there, because this is just all about him.
So speaking of the chalkboard, what did you think of the chalkboard? The concept of kind of pointing the Doctor in the direction that he needs to go. Thoughts?
Again, I think that's part of his process at work. That's him. He's asking those questions, but we're experiencing it as Clara, the school teacher, writing it on the chalkboard. And I was going to say a minute ago, at this same time on the BBC Sherlock series, we're establishing that, got this idea that Sherlock Holmes has a whole castle inside his head. But he has places that he goes to, and there's doors that are locked, and there's, you know, places where he hides things and all of that stuff. And, the showrunner and head writer for that series was, what's his name?
Yeah. Steven somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is very much on Steemo's mind right now, is the place you go to work things out. So.
Mm. All right, Clarence, let me ask you a question. Again, I keep going on the idea that you're a big Clara fan. That's why I keep going back to you. But without giving anything away from the finale, and I know you said earlier that you don't remember because it's been so many years from last time watching the finale, were you happy to have this as a Clara Light episode, or would you have rather it be framed with him and Clara in the confession dial, or maybe even a hunt for Clara? Or were you happy with the way they presented it?
You know, I feel like as far as Capaldi and being an actor on Doctor Who, or being the Doctor, or any actor for that matter, this is probably the type of episode you'd want at some point in your career. It's a chance for him to carry the show himself. A lot of pressure in that. So from that point of view, I never even, you know, they kept showing her. They showed a picture on the wall of Clara. They showed her in a TARDIS. But honestly, I could have had the episode without her. Mm-hmm. And I think just based on the performance that Peter Capaldi gives in this and the demands of that performance, he has to carry everything. I feel like I didn't really need Miss Coleman in this one.
All right. Lee, what about you? What do you think?
Same, except that I love the idea of her being his expository tool, that she's part of his process of working things out. And so, yeah, I was perfectly content with her body double at the blackboard. You know, she's she's the idea of Clara, and that's all he has now.
Yes, agreed.
So, yeah.
You know, I like the comment Wynn Grace just said in the chat. He says it could have almost been retooled into a one-man stage show. By all means, absolutely. Yep. So.
Yep.
So, Lee, let me ask you this question. From a writing perspective and from a directing perspective, how brave was it to take Doctor Who and basically make it into a one-man stage show?
Oh, this is the high wire act of all high wire acts. This could fail so spectacularly. This could be so dull. And yeah, it needs this kind of, you know, on point brilliance from Stephen Moffat. It needs a director like Rachel Talalay, and you need the incomparable Peter Capaldi. And if you got them, if you got all of that, and you got the money to make all of this look like it needs to look,
yes,
then this is going to work. But it's, people may not generally know how long Peter Capaldi has been working. I mean, he's a teenager. He's very young when he's in Local Hero, or, you know, there's an episode of The Vicar of Dibley where the vicar's in love with the hot guy from the BBC who's coming to make a movie in their parish, you know, and it's Peter Capaldi. And he's got to be 25 years old there. He has been everywhere, done everything. He has triumphed on the stage and screens of all sizes. So something like this is a genuine challenge for an actor like him, but he's equal to it.
Mm.
He does something in this episode that I had not caught before, and I love it so much. And I can imagine the conversations, if there was any debate at all with him and Rachel, about, he has a speech to Clara, which he's talking about the fact that he's thinking out loud and that he appreciates the fact that he's clearly being spied on, because he says, I'm nothing without an audience. And just for a flash of a second, he looks right in the camera.
Mm. Ooh, I missed it.
Yep.
And which is a meta wink. It's sort of a reminder that this show doesn't exist without us. But I could also see the director saying, no, you're not supposed to look at the camera. Well, he's done direct address to the audience several times in this season, you know, who wrote Beethoven's Fifth. And actually, the very beginning of this episode, he's talking to somebody. And later on, I think you could say he's talking to Clara, but I'm not
who
sure.
Who is exactly?
Yeah, I think he may be talking to you. So,
or is he talking to himself? But
we're talking to Clara, right?
Or talking, yeah.
But anyway, watch it again and watch. I just love that little, tiny little take to the camera. I'm nothing without an audience. Boom.
You know, back, I keep going back to the directing, but you were talking about the budget and the things that they did. They could have gone with the concept of dressing him with a beard and making him look older as each, you know, years progressed. They didn't do that. Glad that they didn't do that.
Yeah, because I hated it when they did it with the 11th Doctor. So
yes, totally agree.
Okay.
But what she did do that conveyed the same thing was take those same scenes that we had seen earlier and show them again, and then show them again a little faster, and then show them again a little faster, and then a little faster, and then, and so you create that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's fantastic. You
know, very,
and
very good.
Compare that to time loop shows that we've seen on in other franchises. There's a Next Generation that I can't watch because it just makes me mad how they keep doing the same thing over and over again. And I know that's the point of the story, that they're stuck, but they're the ones suffering. It makes the audience suffer along with them in a way that I say, I'm going to change the channel because I don't have to be in this situation you do. And I don't feel that way in this one. I want to see how he's going to get out of it. And that, yeah, that editing pace thing that accelerates throughout the episode until it's just a blur of images by the time we get to the end. It's just thrilling. And here's something else. I know this is for you, Kyle, because you and I both have a big heart for Murray Gold. I didn't appreciate until watching this one again that his score for this episode is operatic. It's got voices in it and soaring brass, and he's just using the whole orchestra in a way that he doesn't ordinarily. It's an opera. So it's like I think one of the reasons why it doesn't feel like it's a story about one man alone is because it feels like there's a presence of, you know, 100 other people there. There's in a sense in those musical instruments. So I would encourage people, if you haven't listened to the music track, just watch this episode and just pay attention to this music. It is stunning.
And I think the name of this track is called The Shepherd's Boy. I think because, you know, they keep referencing that.
I don't have this album. So, yeah.
This is also the same track in his regeneration. So that is really cool. So
his what?
His he regenerates. You didn't know? Darn it. How did you think we got to 15? Wibbly wobbly 50 weenie. I don't know.
I saw it, and he split right off from David Tennant.
Well, you know, that was the 10th Doctor. Yeah. And that's all right then.
Exactly. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Let me also offer that. You know, time loop came back up again, but you know, in normal time loop episodes, we get to see them go through it, learn a little bit, do it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. This episode was almost entirely about perseverance.
Yeah.
Get a little further each time. Pound on the diamond, whatever it's called. I can't remember. Each time.
Aspantium. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, aiding or lending to what you said earlier about this being very tough on the watch. Because you're just seeing this guy go through torture each time just to get a little bit further. A little bit further.
Well, and in the real world, we know we've been in situations where we're just hitting our head against the wall, right? We're just breaking our hand trying to break through something. And yeah, any casual passerby would say, dude, that's not doing you any good. Stop.
And how many of us felt every time he hit that your knuckles were being sliced alive, so to speak? Yeah. I mean, he portrayed that so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Clarence, I want to ask you this question. The veiled figure, I want to go back to the veiled figure for a moment. What did that represent to you?
Oh, boy. Death. The oncoming of death. I found the somewhat interesting, especially how the Doctor was just trying to buy time. He figured if it is optimal speed and going to the further side of the castle, he can buy himself about 82 minutes to eat, sleep, and, you know, do whatever else he needed to.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt like it was the oncoming of death. Now, we know that, or I assume from what we learned from this episode, that it's a reason to get information from the doctor, you know, going back to, like you said, this whole confessional thing. But yeah, very, very creepy figure that very much seemed like the oncoming of Dev. And I also thought the whole, and was I reading this correctly? Help me out. The camera was wired into the Vale's eyes. Is that what we were seeing there? I was a little confused by that.
It seemed to be the first time we saw it, that point of view, he looked across the way and he could see the Vale, you know, in the window across the way. And it was clear that what he was seeing on the screen was the point of view from that window.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I got the idea that the point of view is the Vale's. So, but yeah, I guess it's not a confession if there's nobody there to see or hear it.
Ooh, but were they? Because we find out at the end, light bulb moment here. We find out at the end that was not some mythical creature. It was something that reset this program. Let's call it a program for a second. Mm-hmm. Because the being, the veiled figure, ultimately falls apart and you see these like gears and whatnot. Yeah. It's robotic. So what if what's watching are the Time Lords?
Yeah.
They're wanting that confession.
Yeah. Good point.
The Vale is clearly just a tool. That's what we get revealed at the end, that he's an automaton, but it's got eyes.
Does that mean that the person that he is talking to ultimately is not Clara? It turns out to be the Time Lords?
Well, I think most of that conversation is actually happening inside his head.
Yeah.
But when he says to the Vale, you know, you want to hear the truth? Here's the truth. Now he's talking to the Time Lords. That's the whole point of this thing. But they're not expecting him to have the sheer moxie to decide instead to just go punch that wall for 2 billion years. I think that's not part of their plan.
Mm-mm.
That's the way I read that. So,
I do as well.
Here he is at his lowest possible moment, and he's still an aspirational figure for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Morgan says it really well.
Yep. Well, since you said Morgan says, why don't you read what Morgan says?
Morgan says it's such a lost cause, but he does it anyway. He makes it. It makes the "I can't keep doing this" that much more heart wrenching. He's a tired old doctor that just wants to give up and lose, but he trudges on. That voice of Clara is still in his head,
saying,
"You have to win."
Yeah.
How are you going to win?
And then Wingrace follows up by saying, it's also a metaphor for human life, sort of. We aren't going to make it out alive, but we can do our most to leave it one tiny bit better the next round.
For the next round.
For the next round, yes, yeah, indeed.
That's great.
All right, well, gentlemen, do either of you have any other items before we move into our favorites?
I'll mention that I loved some of the aesthetic of what was going on, the whole skulls in the ocean, a great representation of of how long he's been there. And when we see him plug those things into his head for the first time, and if you didn't already realize it was his skull, it adds that much more weight to it. So I love the skull. I love the grave scene. I thought was interesting, though I am looking for a little more meaning in that. I don't know if I fully got the meaning out of the grave scene, other than I thought he might be digging his own grave when I first saw it. And also, I think you had the hexagon, or was it a pentagon? Like
it's a hex.
With the arrows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if I fully understood that either.
Now that you mentioned it, I don't guess I did either.
Yeah. Huh. It was very interesting, though, all of those little things. And also, let me add this. The first time he gets his clothes when he comes from the sea or the ocean, like, so did the first time or one of the times he came through there, he took his clothes off and went through it naked to get to the end? Like, how did the clothes get there the first time? I don't know. My head is hurting on that a little bit.
Well, yeah. It is a time paradox, I guess, or that there's two suits of clothes, or that one was prepared for him when he arrived. But I, watching it again this time, it struck me that he arranges the clothes kind of like the condition in which he found them And then he tweaks them so he puts them exactly the way he found them.
Mm.
And I wonder if that's a dawning realization of what's going on here.
Hmm. Interesting.
Like, these aren't another suit of clothes. These are my clothes.
Wow. And
I have to have them just like this. Mm. I don't know. It's not time travel, but it's anyway. But he is going to live this again, and it's got to be like that.
All right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Lee, did you have any other items?
I got two things, a little one and a big one. The little one is that he wraps this up by saying the hybrid is not half Dalek. Nothing's half Dalek. The Daleks would never allow that. Has he already forgotten about the stupid half Dalek thing in the Daleks Take Manhattan?
But they ultimately didn't allow that.
Okay, that's fair. You're right. You're right. You're right. They didn't. That didn't work. I just wish he'd said they'll never let that happen again or something.
Good point. And okay. What was the other
anyway, one? The punchline here is, it's me. Which I think in the audience we're all supposed to say, it is I, the doctor, the person you're looking at, and I'm coming for you. And so we can go away and say, well, in what way is he a hybrid? Oh my God, we're back to the TV movie where he says he's half human.
Yes, I remember that.
What? Spoilers. It's Madame Me, and to me that is such a cheat device that it's unworthy of the show.
After but
the
is
brilliance
it?
Of this, yes.
But I don't think
so. The only reason she is called Me in the first place was transparently to create this kind of confusion later on, and that's just lazy writing.
But nobody calls themselves Me. Okay, I can't spoil next episode. Right. So
I'm just saying this little bit of this episode is the only thing that makes me busted a few points because I just think that's dumb.
I don't know if I ever realized that.
I felt insulted as an audience member. I thought, oh, come on. We've called her Me this whole time just so we can do this. Really?
Okay. So what he should have done on our baseball team,
we've got some short, we got nicknames for our players. You know, so we got who's on first, what's on second.
Yeah. So
no, keep playing.
Basically what they should have done to have made it all right in the world is it should have ended by him saying the hybrid is you, not me.
Right. You. And out in the audience, we're going, what?
What?
I didn't. Huh?
What? What?
Anyway. What? But it's just something that bugged me as a writer, but it's, and as an audience member, but it's a quibble. It's the end of this completely brilliant episode.
But
so
all it was, I got to say this and then I'll move on. It was just like one moment in time. Just, that's all sure. I'll say. But,
no, it was the whole season. We planned this for the whole season. But
I was being snarky and funny.
I know.
Just one little moment. But anyway, before we move, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Cal. I'm sorry.
No. One thing I want to bring up before I move on is, and then I want you to say what it was you were about to say. I want to reference the grave one more time. I thought that it could also have been symbolic of Clara's grave. You know.
Oh, and the sign that he finds says, I'm in 12.
Yes. Right?
And so he goes looking for room 12. Well, he is 12.
Mm-hmm. I think that was just Moffat playing with us like he did with 11's hour is over now. The clock is striking 12.
That's what I thought. But he never acknowledges it. So, yeah, I guess it is just supposed to be a meta joke for us. But otherwise, what does it mean?
Well, I know what it means. It means that we are
Clarence.
Now.
No, you.
Oh, yeah, Clarence, your point. Thank you, Lee Shackelford.
Oh, I think we should pick up Morgan Lee's comment there, saying that she is in the hybrid is 12 and Clara Kemp. That's interesting as well.
Very interesting. No spoilers and no comments.
Well, especially depending on which Clara we're talking about.
Too. Yes.
Yeah.
There have been so many.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My last comment was the doctor said he left Gallifrey because he was scared.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's the truth he's been keeping for all these years.
He may have been afraid Tech Taylor may have come back.
Multiple child murderer.
I wasn't trying to be, I was actually trying to be funny, but I wasn't trying to be bad funny.
So,
hey, from the context, if you go Fugitive Doctor, you kind of were scared to some degree because you wanted to get out of Division. Sort of.
Dick Tanner was clearly a serial killer too. I mean, we kept seeing these kids who never, for some reason, never grew to adulthood. It's like, what's happening there?
All I know is if you have foundlings, for anyone listening, if you have a foundling out there, do not take them to Gallifrey by all means. They will mass murder your child.
I guess so.
All right, but what I am also saying is, before I go off any further off the rails, favorite quote, Clarence Brown, I'll start with you.
I think I love the part where Clara gives the doctor some tough love, saying, "Doctor, it's time. Get up off your arse and win."
Nice. Anybody else think of Edna Mode when you hear that?
Pull yourself together and win.
And win.
Yes. Then come back here. I enjoy these chats.
All right. Lee Shackelford, favorite quote.
I'm nothing without an audience. I just love that.
All right. My favorite quote was, "I finally run out of quarter. There's a life summed up." Considering how many times we've made fun of the doctor running and going down, especially in classic, these corridors that were just different angles at the same place.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
A meta joke if I ever.
Can I give an honorable mention?
Yes, because I have one too. Go for it.
The doctor saying, "It's a killer puzzle box designed to scare me to death, and I'm trapped inside it. Must be Christmas."
Yeah. Yep. I love that too.
All right, Lee, do you have an honorable mention?
I do not.
All right. Well, I want to. This one is a little long. So, since you don't have one, that'll make up for mine being a little long. But I just had to mention it because it was just so well written and it was just really nice. So, it is when he said, "As you come into this world, something else is also born. You begin your life and it begins a journey towards you. It moves slowly, but it never stops. Wherever you go, whatever path you take, it will follow. Never faster, never slower, always coming. You will run, it will walk. You will rest, it will not. One day, you will linger in the same place too long. You will sit too still or sleep too deep. And when, too late, you rise to go, you will notice a second shadow next to yours. Your life will then be over." Very, very deep. But I just thought very well written and very eloquent, I thought so.
It's lovely.
All right. Favorite scene. Lee Shackelford, I want to start with you.
No question, no contest for me. The long dive in which he is apparently committing suicide or the most desperate escape. But on the way down, he invents his own method of escape. And we get to visit the inside of the doctor's mind and thought process for the first time and learn how he does it. And it's kind of power of positive thinking, isn't it? He imagines himself having escaped. Now, how did I do it? And works backward from there. That has had, you know, positive impact in my real world life. I really like that.
Nice.
Fantastic scene.
And isn't that the best that TV can do for you, is give you something that you can take positive back and apply it?
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody should write a book about that.
Indeed. All right. Clarence Brown.
I think Mr. Shackelford read my mind on this one.
Oh, did it again.
Mine is calculating the jump and to see him throw the chair out or wait for the splash and calculate, you know, is that survivable, and all the things that went in his head as he was trying to figure out, you know, what seemingly looked like to us a leap to his death. I just thought that was amazing. And, you know, loved being in the doctor's head for those few moments to see him work it out.
All right. Awesome.
It's a very convincing effect too, isn't it? We know Peter Capaldi didn't do that, but you know, in the classic series, we would have put it, his costume on a dummy and thrown him out the window. So I'm kind of wondering how they did do this.
And what year did this come out?
2015.
Oh yeah, those are some solid 2015 special effects going on throughout this episode. So
you think that's CG Doctor on the way down?
I don't know. Maybe. But even if it's not, I will say, like, everything surrounding him, even if he is like green screened in, just the sure effect of the fall.
Well, see, think about it. In 2014, we've seen that version, the 12th Doctor, you know, fall out of a plane or jump out of a plane and use his coat as a parachute. So,
yeah.
So before I give my favorite scene, I want to give the chat an opportunity to say what your final rating is before we move into final rating. So if you're in the chat and want to rate this episode from 1 to 5, please do so. But my favorite scene is tied to both of your favorite scenes, which without your favorite scenes, I couldn't have my favorite scene, which is when he finally broke through and emerged on Gallifrey, because it is after whether it was virtual or whether it was real, for him, billions of years of getting through that and finally emerging victorious on the other side.
Right. What a triumph.
Yes, indeed. So that was my favorite scene. So, final rating. I'm going to start it because I never start it. I think I'll start it with 5 Return to Gallifreys out of 5. Clarence Brown, what say ye? Final rating.
I think I'm going to give this one 4.5 Spantium Walls out of 5.
Okay. Lee Shackelford, what say you?
See, this time you did mine. I was going to do the Walls of Asbantium. But you know my quibbles about the end, so I'm going to give it 4.75 skulls with electrodes on them. How about that?
All right, real quick before I move to Morgan's, I will say the only thing I didn't like about that, because, and Clarence, I mentioned this on our most recent discussing Trek, which was, I don't like insects and I don't like bugs. And so I hated the flies. And I know it was for illusion and purpose and for the audio for us to know as the audience that this thing was coming. I get that, but I just freaking hate insects.
Yeah. But yet again, some great special effects going on there, you have to admit.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So let me give Morgan's number out of number, and she does give this 5 in her follow-up chat. 5 little birds sharpening their beak on a diamond mountain out of 5. Awesome. And our friend Wynn Grace says 4.95 something's clever out of 5. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, any other items, thoughts, or whatever out of, and I just realized I didn't move from quote to scene to rating in my PowerPoint that I like showing. But anyway.
Whatever that is.
All right. So, any other items before we close?
It was a great scene of the doctor emerging and say, go to the town, tell them who's here. In so many words.
Tell them I took the long way around.
This boy is uncredited.
Go ahead.
That's all. I just thought it interesting that Jenna Coleman gets an end credit because she's on screen for 10 seconds and this boy doesn't get a credit at all.
So that 2 billion years or billions of years actually passed in the real world?
I think that's the big point about this and why it made me think of Next Generation's The Inner Light, for example, is that I don't think any time passed at all outside the confession dial. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
I've got to say this real quick. our friend Gwen Grace says in the chat. Such a great discussion. I was too enthralled to comment much.
Hey, that's what we're here for, man. Yes.
All right. So for everyone in the chat, if you are watching us live, thank you for spending an hour with us discussing Who, literally, because it is just past an hour. So thank you for joining us. And for everyone listening on the podcast, if you would like to check us out live, we are on most Tuesdays, not every Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. You can find us on Twitch. You can find us on YouTube. And of course, on Facebook, you can find us broadcasting simultaneously streams.
Yeah. So
for everyone listening, as I always like to say, we will be back next time.
Next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.